You're back with the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
He's Blank, I'm Branham. We are the Bees on ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5, 713-780-ESPN. If I told you at the start of the season that you had to lose four in a row to get the no-hitter yesterday in a 10-run game, and then maybe get you on a roll, would you have taken it? 713-780-ESPN, HRMP listener line, 713-780-3776. Blankers, would you have taken it? Would you have taken the four-game sweep at the hands of the Yankees for a no-hitter yesterday in a 10-run performance in which you got five dongs?
No, because, well, is it just the no-hitter, or is it the overall?
Well, it's everything. You scored the 10 runs. It's the entire game yesterday.
Yeah, see, to me, the no-hitter doesn't matter as much as not getting swept by the Yankees, because it's the Yankees. And for me personally, and I think for a lot of folks, it sits a different way when it's them, and you know their fan base is going to like run rampant with it. And because of the fact that no matter what, you're going to have downs, you're going to get swept in a series, possibly. And from the Astros' perspective, it's happened at least once the last couple of years. I don't really care. I didn't think the offense was that far off. I thought the offense was competitive and you had leads in the Yankee series. If I can avoid the sweep against the Yankees as opposed to just one big outburst on one night by the Blue Jays, that I'll take avoiding the sweep against the Yankees.
What if it was just like the Royals in the first four games? It wasn't the Yankees.
Well, and then does the offense still does the series play out the same way, regardless
of team?
Exact same way,
except the opponent's different. It's the Royals and not the Yankees.
Then I'll take the breakout against Toronto, because I think that's the start. Then that would be the start of putting everything in the right direction, and you don't have the disdain and the extra that comes with being swept by the Yankees, Dodgers, Rangers-type teams. So maybe it changes it then, but yeah, because it's the Yankees and because of how it happened and when it happened and because of their fan base, I would rather not get swept by the Yankees than deal and just have a take the whatever outcome of the Toronto series.
Yeah, I'm we over me, so I'm gonna go not the sweep. But the thing is, like, the Texas 3379er text, no, it's four losses versus one win. This doesn't necessarily mean you win those games. It doesn't necessarily mean that you win the series. It means you just don't get swept.
It may be a split.
So you might even go 1-3.
Yeah.
You might even go 1-3. So it's not four losses versus one win. It's the unknown of what happens, other than the fact that you can lock in, you get at least one. That's all you can lock in. You're locking in that you win one of those four games. You're not locking in anything more than that. So you might go 1-3 and then get the night, and then not have the night that you had yesterday with no Ronel Blanco, no hitter, without the five home runs and the 10 runs and all.
But you're facing a rookie pitcher, so you still have a chance in that game, as opposed to, again, Yankees, big money all over the place, and hoping to make a statement.
Yeah, see, I'm we over me, though. So, like, I'm not picking the – I mean, it was a great night, obviously. You know, you get a no-hitter, it's fantastic. 17th no-hitter in team history. The offense got going. You got some home runs from guys that you want to homer. Like, you know, Yainer Diaz, you want him to have a big year. So seeing him hit two home runs, like, okay, all right. This is what we're going to have this year with Yainer Diaz. You see Jeremy Pena break up the long schneid of not having a home run. First time since last July. But I'm not picking that one moment in a couple of individual performances over, you know, having to endure a four-game sweep.
No, you're right. But, like, Tuck was struggling, too. You get him two bombs, get him to where, you know, he looks like he's going to be the old Kyle Tucker again. That's great. There were so many positives last night, aside from just the no-hitter, to make you believe and really change maybe the dynamic of a lot of people out there that panicked after the first series and thought the season was over, like the dumbass that was texting us that they're going to finish no better than third, and this is what they told us all along. The offense was terrible. It's like, okay, well, I'm sure you haven't texted today on that topic.
Yeah.
It's a fluid situation, but I really love what happened last night, but I hate the Yankees and their fans so much that that would sway me.
Yeah, I mean, even if it was the Royals, I'm still picking the team aspect of it, as opposed to the one glorious moment. Like, it's cool to have it, but I'm not picking it over four games that I could, win, obviously. 5-2-4-0, no. No hitters are nice, but W's are the main goal. That's where I'm at. That's why my answer is no. 1-7-7-2, I would have rather swept the Yankees than lost a no-hitter last night. Now, that's a different question because you're not guaranteeing four wins, but I agree with that. Like,
for
if you
sure.
tell me which of the two options would you rather take, sweeping the Yankees four games to none, or the no-hitter yesterday. Even if you sacrifice the game yesterday altogether, it's 4-0 against the Yankees. It's 4-0 against the A's for me. Like, I would take the four wins against Oakland over the one moment yesterday.
Well, and sweeping the Yankees gives you a 9.9% chance of making it to the front page of ESPN.com.
For those that care about that, you're probably right. 5-0-1-0, I would rather win four games than get no hit and give up 10 runs. Okay, yeah, that's a good point. 3-3-7-9, no, that's four losses versus one win, but it might be three losses.
Yeah,
it
we
might
didn't be. Say how many wins you get in the series. You just don't get swept.
8-3-1-1, it's no-hitter. Do we win four? What's the trade-off? A trade-off is you get, the big moment. Now, how much you care about the big moment might not matter to you as a fan of the Astros, but I imagine that – I wonder what Ronel Blanco thinks. Would Ronel Blanco take the sweep of the Yankees if he gets that one shining moment?
Nope.
You don't think?
Nope.
You don't think so?
I think he takes the no-hitter and runs.
That's what I'm saying.
Oh, yeah. He takes – from a guy that's not – he's 30 already, like we talked about. He's not, he's not destined for the Hall of Fame, and who knows if he's destined to be in this rotation by the time we get, a couple weeks in. You're going to take your one shining moment and take that no-hitter.
Yeah, I think Blanco, if you gave him truth serum, I think he does. I think he takes the no-hitter, too. 5-7-9-8, nah, I'd rather the Astros be 2-3 after losing to the Jays last night than suffer through post after post after post after post.
See?
About Juan Soto and the Yankees.
That's my point.
Yeah, you did have to endure that. 8-3-1-1, I'll take four wins and a loss every time over four losses and a no-hitter. Again, you can't lock in the four wins. No one's saying that you sweep the Yankees. We're just saying that if you had to take the sweep to the Yankees to get what you got yesterday, would you? You could still be 1-4,
Right.
You could have lost to the Blue Jays yesterday, but you get that one win over the Yankees.
But facing – the guy had never pitched in the bigs before, right? He was his major league debut last night for the Blue Jays?
No. He pitched a lot last year. He was actually really good. He pitched in the second half of last year.
I was listening on the radio, and I thought they said this was his first – maybe it was his first major league start. Maybe he pitched, but he wasn't a starter last year. I don't know. I thought that's what they said on the radio last night.
You're listening to the other guys?
I mean, when it's Astros baseball and I need an update because I'm coaching softball, yeah.
Yeah, he didn't work as a starter last year.
There you go.
He pitched 20 games out of the bullpen, 36 and a third. He had a 1.73 ERA last year.
Built Ford tough.
He had 35 strikeouts and 36 and a third. Like, he had a good year. But, yeah, first year, I didn't realize he didn't start last year. I knew he pitched in the second half of last season. I didn't realize it was all out of the pen, though. 3-2-0-9, I'm fine getting swept at home by the likes of the Twins or the Braves, but never a four-game sweep versus the Yankees, Dodgers, or Rangers. So they do care about the team here a little bit.
I nailed it. I said the three teams that are in the craw of most Astros fans consistently. Yeah, I feel the same way.
50-10, since July 6th, the Astros have thrown more no-hitters than Jeremy Pena has hit home runs. Yeah.
Hey, but there's hope. We have what we have last night.
The thing, I mean, Pena's been good offensively.
It's only
five games, so let's temper our expectations here. But as far as, I hope Jeremy Pena has a good offensive season, I'm not sure it could start better. Like, he's been good offensively.
But even if it's a good offensive season, it doesn't have to be 17 bombs or more. If he just doesn't strike out as much and chase bad pitches and does some of the things that we've seen him do that we've talked about him doing, you're going to be just fine because he's an above-average defensive shortstop anyway. And even when people criticized his year last year, it was better than his first year.
6-6-9-0, I'll take the no-hitter. Shows potential in the fifth starter. So he's thinking bigger picture. So that's the first person that would take the no-hitter.
Yeah, because I don't understand that just because of the fact that you know that there's help on the way, whether he's your fifth starter or not. You got several other guys to choose from.
Yeah. 8-4-8-0, TV said it was his eighth career start. That was Blanco.
That's Blanco.
That was Blanco's eighth career start. We're talking about the Blue Jays starter, Francis, J.P. Francis. That was J.P. Francis's first big league start. Pitched only out of the bullpen last year.
Like Hunter Mashinsky?
Yeah. Like him. 9-6-2-3, I'd give up the no-hitter, not the runs. That's interesting. Because maybe the runs get your offense going. Or maybe it's just one of those nights. Who knows?
I was kind of thinking the same way. Like, if we're just talking about the no-hitter versus that, you know, that kickstart, that big 10-run outburst, that's something to consider just because of the fact that you know how vitally important, especially with your starters on the shelf, the number of starters are on the shelf, that you need your offense to perform, and that would be a big breakout.
Key from L.A., so you guys not going to mention Alvarez batting 100. I'm not worried about you on Alvarez.
He's hit hard ball. He's hit the ball hard. Sometimes you just hit him at people.
Yeah, I'm not worried about Jordan Alvarez.
See Corey Jolks.
What do you mean?
Corey Jolks for a while. Remember that when they were debating whether to send him down? He's struggling with the balls aren't dropping, but he's hitting them hard everywhere.
He was the he was a tale of two cities last year. Last year he got off to a pretty good start and he was getting a lot of soft contact to fall. And then right before he got sit down, you're right, he was hitting the ball hard and they were just
right at
out.
People. Yep.
So the whole, it evened itself out. Uncle Barney says, you guys forgot that Abreu got a hit. Big news. Yeah, he did. He had a baseball with eyes on it. Was able to sneak it up the middle.
A duck snort.
Yeah. Sign Brandon Belt.
I'd be fine with that because you need insurance where you have question marks. And he is definitely at this point a big question mark.
3227, would you guys rather be the top rated show in the city and every other show last or every show ranked 2?
Huh?
I don't get the last part.
Maybe I don't
every
either.
Show at our station. Let's go with that. I'm going to try to translate here. Would you guys rather be the top-rated show in the city and every other show at our station last, or every show at our station ranked 2? I took liberty with this text.
So in our slot, we would be 2.
Yeah, yeah. Every show at our station would be 2 in our area in their respective slots.
I don't think that we're talking about the same kind of thing as the we and team when it comes to that. I'll take 1 in the city.
Yeah. I'll take the one that pays the most.
Well, I'm thinking that if you're 1 in the city, that probably is going to go hand in hand.
Yeah, I mean, we don't have a World Series, right? We don't have a championship that we play for.
You and I don't as a team, but we do
that's
individually, right? Yeah.
I don't know.
What did you say you were going to choose?
I said whichever one pays the most.
Oh, yeah. But if you're 1 in the city, that means you have ratings. If you have ratings, you have money, because that's where agencies that don't care about the programming and just care about the numbers and the slots are just going to load up on the best ratings.
Yeah. Poncho says, can't change the past. Take the no-no. There you go. Take the no-no. All right, 713-780-ESPN. How do you feel about the Texans' ability to stop these pretty good quarterbacks in the NFL? 713-780-3776. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. I know that I feel pretty good that General Ben is the best spirit in the business. I like a good drink at the end of the day. The vodka, the gin, the bourbon, all are in the rotation for me. What's in your rotation? I'll tell you what, though. General Ben Spirits does it better than anybody else. You ask, how do they do that? Well, their revolutionary Percedo technology that eliminates impurities for the cleanest, smoothest spirits you'll ever taste. In fact, a lot of spirits send their stuff to General Ben so they can run it through their Percedo technology, and they send it back out to the other spirit companies. Purification of General Ben is unrivaled. You'll love what's not in it, including undesirable acids. These acids take the enjoyment out of your drinks. Well, General Ben gets rid of these undesirable acids so you can enjoy. Try a sip of General Ben vodka, gin, straight bourbon, or cask-strength bourbon. Compare it to what you drink, and you will never go back. I've been a General Ben man ever since I had the first sip. You get all the flavor and none of the burn. It is so smooth. It is so clean. Eliminates that burn. Enjoy your drink. Don't work through your drink. Look for General Ben at the liquor store. Ask for it at your favorite restaurant or bar. Head to the General Ben tasting room. If you're going to an Astros game soon, stop by the General Ben store there. Or if you're going to the Toyota Center to watch a Rockets game, stop by General Ben there. Pick up some General Ben on the way to your seats. And also, head over to the website, gentleben.com. Learn about your new favorite. Understand the incredible story that is General Ben, from Dr. Ben Moser to Ricky Ford. Also, you can order straight from the website, GentleBen.com. You can order the vodka, you can order the gin, order the bourbon, add it to your cart, have it delivered straight to your doorstep. GentleBen.com, General Ben, period.
You're back with the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Get into the Texans' ability to stop those pretty good QBs in a second. 5506 says sign Clevinger and Belt. Clevinger's with the White Sox, didn't he?
Yep.
Going back to them. I'm all on Brandon Belt. I don't know what Brandon Belt would be demanding. He's not signed, though, so I figure the price has to come down each and every day that he is not with a team. He's an upgrade over John Singleton. He's an upgrade He's an upgrade over Brian Abreu. Or Jose Abreu.
Yeah, Jose Abreu, no doubt. And it gives you an insurance policy, whether you think he's going to pull the same thing he did last year and snap out of it at some point or not. You're too good of a team to be sitting there dangling in the wind with who might be backing up the underachieving Jose Abreu.
I got into it wasn't really an argument. It was a good conversation on Twitter with someone earlier this morning about the Brandon Belt conversation. And look, I don't know what Brandon Belt's demanding. If Brandon Belt's demanding $10 million a year, like, obviously you're not going to get that done. I don't even think that they're going to sign him for, like, if he was willing to take $3 million, I'm not even sure they would do that. Because Crane only makes money moves whenever he feels it's a player that's a huge upgrade. Mm-hmm. See Josh Hader. See Jose Abreu when they signed him the first time. Didn't really live up to that. The Rafael Montero ones, I try to defend, and it's like, oh, man. Could you imagine? You could have Maton and Stanek on Montero money, and maybe even a third other reliever. Ugh. Like, the Montero thing really did set back your state of your bullpen.
Yeah, I had several people. Some of my buddies are still very much lamenting the fact that they blame Bagwell because this is all his fault, because two of the three guys, no matter what – and really, honestly, whatever you got from Brantley, he was still grossly overpaid, but – the two other guys are just absolutely killing you.
Because what's Montero making? He's making like
11 plus, yeah.
Yeah, I think it's around $11.5 million AAV. Stanek signed for $4 million. Maton was 6.25. That's pretty high there. And then Neris was 9.
He got that much?
Yeah. So you could have had Neris and Stanek at $13 million instead of Montero at 11.5. Yeah, I didn't realize
Maton. No, not Neris. Neris got paid pretty good, right? The Cubs were paying him.
$9 million a year.
Did he? That's all he got.
So you could have got Neris at 9, Stanek for 4, add that up, it's 13 versus 11.5 for Montero. And the other beauty of the Neris and the Stanek deal is they're both one-year deals.
Yeah.
Like, it's zero in future investment. So that Montero contract, it like, he didn't live up to it last year, obviously, but it also really hurt the Astros' ability to add to the middle of this bullpen. Like, you could have had two guys for one. Two guys
Bagwell, Crane, blame who you want. Those were two boneheaded moves.
Yeah.
From the length of the contract to the money involved and the ramifications for this year and possibly next. That's just awful, man. I mean, and by the way, Maton still loves you. He still bleeds orange. He did you a solid last night.
Yeah, he did.
Plunked three different Rangers.
I'm surprised he's not going to be suspended, though.
Well, did they say he's not?
I don't think.
I think baseball takes 24 to 48 to make the decisions that they make.
What are you suspending him for, though?
Because he dotted three different guys.
I mean, his command was bad.
Okay. Well.
I've been wrong on this before, though. Like, I thought it was silly that Brian Abreu got 2-game suspension because Adolis Garcia charged the mound. Like, Adolis Garcia could have charged Maton yesterday, and Maton would have been suspended 2 games.
Yeah, the Mets reliever that threw behind what's his name from the Brewers after he slid hard got 3 games.
Yeah, but I mean that was pretty telling.
Didn't hit him
that
though.
That one had a story. Like, he threw at the guy who slid through the bag that led to the benches clearing. Like, that had a story.
But message like sent without damage done, as opposed to hitting three different hitters and then Garcia goes nuts.
I mean, there's a difference, though, whenever you throw at a guy with intent versus you just don't have it that day and you're hitting dudes with curveballs.
But maybe Maton did throw with intent.
That's what I'm saying. I don't know. I don't know if there was intent there. Like, I don't think there was. I haven't read that there was intent.
Still had the red ass from last year and all the gamesmanship and the theatrics from Garcia.
I think you might be reaching a bit, but maybe you're right.
I don't mind doing it, though.
I have no idea. But they do hand out suspensions for throwing at guys like they're candy on Halloween, so you might be right. But anyways, back to that Brandon Belt argument. Like, people were like, well, Brandon Belt could be who he was in 2022 when he had a 676 OPS and hit for 213. Yeah, he did that. He wasn't very good 2 years ago, but that was the worst year he's had in his career. Worst year that Brandon Belt's had in his career. He's 36 right now, so he's a little older now. I'm not giving him a multi-year deal. I'm giving him a one-year deal.
Right.
676 OPS, the worst year in Brandon Belt's career 2 years ago. Last year, it's 858, by the way. But 2 years ago, if you want to use that as your barometer of who Brandon Belt could be, 676 OPS. Not very good, right? Not very good. 676. You know what Jose Abreu's OPS is in his tenure as a Houston Astro? 668.
I was going to say he's in the 600s. Yeah.
668. It's worse. Jose Abreu, as a Houston Astro, is worse than Brandon Belt's worst year 2 years ago. Mm. And then on top of that, he's retaking John Singleton's spot on the roster. John Singleton's career OPS barely cracked 600. Barely.
Who's a better defensive player, Belt or
I don't know
Abreu?
Too much about Belt's defense. I can't imagine that it's worse than Abreu, though.
I would agree.
I don't think Jose Abreu is much defensively.
At least now, right? Because, I mean, what I've seen even this year, the Olaying at first base and balls off his glove and, Yeah, it's one thing to say he's not Yuli. It's another thing to say he's not very good.
Let me pull up Brandon Belt's Baseball Savant. He is a local kid, too, by the way. Went to Lufkin.
Okay.
He's from Lufkin, so just remember that. Baseball Savant says his fielding run value did not qualify. I don't think he played enough games at first base last year. I think he DH'd a good amount.
Okay.
Let's go back a couple. It doesn't look like he's a very good fielder. So I would say on par. It depends. Like, if you go back a few years ago, it's actually pretty good. So let's just say on par with Jose Abreu?
Yeah, okay.
On par? I mean, what's your cutoff price, though?
I'd say 6 and 7. I could do 7. Okay. I mean, what you did with the Hader deal. I'm fine doing, you know, look, it's a need.
It's not my money. I'm willing to do it. All right, 713-780-ESPN. Let's get to the D'Amico Ryans quote about what he likes this offseason. He talked about stopping pretty good quarterbacks. Do you have faith that the Houston Texans defense could stop pretty good quarterbacks? There's also a job that that was posted from the Houston Texans. Should we apply for this job for the giggles? 713-780-ESPN, HRP listener line. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Guys, right now a word for my good friends at MyBookie, because there's a lot of people on a night-by-night basis that are watching sports. Maybe you caught the women's games last night, or you're getting into baseball and you want to make those games even more interesting and feel a part of them by putting some money down. I recommend that everybody goes to MyBookie.ag, because it's a one-stop shop for all your sports betting and casino needs, complete with a real-life Vegas experience right from the comfort of your phone and your own home. Wherever you are, you can take MyBookie with you, and now you can take your viewing experience to the next level. Real-time live betting that lets you stream and bet the games right from the MyBookie.ag website. Sign up now, take advantage of a generous welcome bonus on your first deposit, all the way up to $1,000. For example, you put $200 in, you get $300 ready to play instantly using our promo code BET975. And the fun doesn't stop there. You'll get up-to-the-minute odds, prop bets, and this week's expert predictions to help you decide who to put your money on a bet-by-bet basis. The fantastic part as well is that you know that even when there's not games going on in all the sports and all the live action, dealers are standing by with casino games, too, if you want to play poker, blackjack, and so much more. Best part about MyBookie, you can bet on anything, anytime, from anywhere, as I always tell you. All you got to do is use our promo code BET975 to secure that welcome bonus today, only with MyBookie. It's the only place I tell you to go. As I always tell you, bet anything, anytime, anywhere, with the only place I tell you to do it. It's MyBookie.ag.
Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's the Killer Bees with Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
On ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
3404, what are y'all's thoughts on the DH and the catcher situation today? Like it?
We talked about
Caratini. He's going to have to catch. He might not have been listening, though. Caratini's going to catch games, so no problem with him starting every once in a while, every fifth game or so. I really like the Yiner DHs whenever he doesn't catch. Yep. I was not that I was worried about it, but I was wondering what a spot his tendencies were going to be there. Yiner's bat needs to be in the lineup, so if Yiner's bat is in the lineup, like, cool. If he needs days off to get off his feet from catching, don't ride him on the bench. Like, let's get his bat in the lineup. He had 2 home runs yesterday.
Keep the big bat that's hot in the lineup. Love that. And because we know that the psyche of Fromber is fragile, if Caratini has a chance to become Fromber's personal catcher, and that's at least the one start a week that he gets, so be it.
Yeah, I really don't want that to happen, though. Like, if he's a Fromber whisperer and can bring out the best in Fromber, okay, cool. Like, cool. But I really don't want him to have to rely on a catcher to, like, be his, you know, therapist. Like, I don't want...
You know what, tell Jeremy? For the overall, we talk about the we thing. If you're for the overall best chance for your team success, if Fromber goes out and deals tonight with Caratini as catcher, I think chances are pretty good that he's going to go back to it.
I don't know. I don't know if that's the case with Espada. Like, I really don't. Like, I don't know his tendencies on that. Like, some managers, they don't care who's catching specific pitchers,
mm-hmm.
Because it's going to be based on who their catcher is and giving him off his feet every X amount of days. Like, and some managers want both catchers to be able to catch a certain pitcher. But there's other managers, like we saw in Houston, where you do have a personal guy. So it depends on the tendencies. We don't know enough about Espada if he's going to be like that. I have no idea.
But on the flip side, what we do know about is the fact that Fromber has a volatile personality and it's fragile, and that you got to really kind of baby it. And if you find a guy that can kind of dial it in and get him to do what he needs to do for you, then you could do a lot worse than having a Caratini versus the offensive zero that Maldonado was. And in a lot of ways, his defense got there too, to where you've got a guy that brings a whole lot more to the table that could be your stabilizer for one of your best pitchers. I'll take that.
Yeah, you know, you're right. Like, I don't want a pitcher to have to rely on a catcher, but if he has to, okay. Like, if Caratini makes Fromber a Cy Young, okay, whatever. Like, cool. Caratini, well, you're catching him. Yiner, you're my DH that day. And it's actually a good time to get Yordan in left field because Fromber's a ground ball guy.
Plus, you're not losing as much as you did a year ago in doing what you needed to do, and you keep Yiner in the lineup at a point where his bat has been so good so early. So, you know what? Your offense doesn't take a step back. If your defense, specifically your pitcher, gains from it, then win.
Yeah, I just don't love what it says whenever like a pitcher has to have a specific catcher.
Well, I get it, because then what happens if JV wants one too?
And also it's the whole, like, you know, I think Yiner's values when he catches. Like, Yiner's production whenever he's catching is incredible offensive value. DHs on average hit better than catchers do, so his values whenever he catches offensively. Uncle Barney says if Diaz can carry Blanco through a no-hitter, he can handle catching all of them. It's a fair point. Fromber's more of the mental aspect of it, which, I mean, cool. Like, if Caratini makes Fromber a Cy Young, cool, that's fine. Like, all right, I can. It's not something that I'm willing to die on that Tiles Hill. I don't like the message, but okay. Like, it does make you a better team. You're right. 713-780-3776. So D'Amico Ryan's at the owners' meetings. I didn't catch this soundbite whenever we listened to this the other day. DJ Bieniemy had like an offseason story out with the Texans today, and D'Amico said this: "We Texans are trying to play dominant defense." Ryan said at the league's annual meetings, if you want to win in this league, you want to be successful in the playoffs, you got to stop some pretty good quarterbacks. So this is a little bit different than D'Amico talking about how we have to be really good at stopping the run. Because how they've handled this offseason defensively is actually more with this quote, stopping good quarterbacks as opposed to being dominant against the run, like trading a one tech, currently having like Settle or Foley being your one tech, Autry maybe playing not necessarily out of position, but a guy who's a fringe three tech, et cetera, et cetera. This quote makes more sense with what the Texans have done this offseason: Danelle Hunter, Autry, trading Collins, letting Rankins go for $1 million less than you were willing to spend. But do you think the Texans have the ability to stop these good quarterbacks now in the NFL? How do you feel about their ability with their defensive moves this offseason to stop pretty good quarterbacks around the NFL?
I feel really good. I feel really good because I think you got a more reliable guy in Alshire that you know that D'Amico knows and seems to be very fond of. You've got three big-time pass rushers now with Will Anderson, with Autry, with Hunter. You've got three guys that can go pin their ears back and go get any quarterback in this league. You still have you obviously still have Stingley at one corner, and depending on what you do at the other corner, you have the ability to get even better. I think overall this defense, Harris is going to have another year under his belt, have more experience with D'Amico. I think that only helps him too. I think that they have done plenty to really upgrade the total defense, and specifically as it relates to stopping a quarterback as opposed to a running back when we're still possibly looking for a defensive lineman to clog the middle. I love what they've done. I think that a little bit out of the box thinking brought you a guy that gets to the quarterback, Autry, no matter where you play him. And I really love the fact that they have options and they've got guys that have proven that they can go get it.
My answer to this is I like what they've done too. Like, I don't think anybody's stopping Pat Mahomes consistently, but it's about putting yourself in the best position to do it as often as you can. I like that too. I think they've improved at pass rush, and John Gernard had a career year. Like, I don't dislike John Gernard. In fact, I stand for John Gernard quite a bit this season, saying that he was a better pass rusher than Will Anderson at the time. The whole grade one ankle sprain thing didn't really do a whole lot for me. I thought that was pretty disappointing if it indeed was true, or the grade one ankle sprain forced John Gernard to miss the final two games of the regular season, which, remind me, were pretty important for the Houston Texans. So I didn't love that. They improved at the opposite defensive end. Will Anderson's going to be a year better. Danielle Hunter's a better football player than John Gernard. You've added some interior pass rush with D'Amico Autry. And look, maybe Autry plays a little bit of DN depending on the rotations, but he's going to be in the three Tech, I think, in pass rushing spots. You brought back Derek Barnett, who I thought was solid whenever you had him. So I like what you've done in terms of creating pressure on a quarterback. And I think the easiest way to get a quarterback from feeling comfortable and getting into a rhythm is making his life difficult. And how do you make the life of a quarterback difficult? By pressuring him, getting him off schedule, getting him off script. So I like that aspect of it. I think Azeez Al-Shaair is an upgrade with, like, mobile quarterbacks too. I think he's faster. I think he's better sideline to sideline than anybody the Texans had last year. The one area I would point to that you would kind of think of as a concern is that second corner spot, because you don't really know who's starting. Yep. If you had a pencil one in today, it's probably Jeff Okuda. Mm-hmm. C.J. Henderson's going to be in the mix there. One of the theories I have, and I have two theories thinking about this earlier today. One is the corner spot. One's the one tech defensive tackle. The Texans and D'Amico like to play a lot of zone. I wonder if they see something with Okuda and Henderson that they like in zone coverage. And then secondly, they don't think that corner two is as important as maybe we do, as maybe as football fans do, because you're not necessarily playing a whole lot of man. You're playing cover. Like, mm-hmm. go sit in the zone, go sit in the coverage spot, and just sit there and react. I wonder if they devalue that spot more than we do.
I mean, I hear what you're saying, but then I start thinking around the league of how many teams have more than one really good. You look at Cincinnati, who's going to be one of the top teams, assuming Burrow's back, with Higgins and with Chase. You look at, you know, teams that, you know, the Jets are trying to put, you know, two big receivers out there that can do some things. You look at a lot of the teams in this league and say, if that's the way they're thinking, yeah, but I don't really want to sit there and put all my eggs in that basket, thinking that at least with Stevie Nelson a year ago, you knew there was another guy you could rely on if he was on an island to do a better than average job, and that you had different ways you could play. I don't know that I like sitting on two guys that have the ability to play in coverage like that, but that maybe will be significantly less than what Stevie Nelson brought to the table.
The other thing, though, is, like, in the NFL, you can't be good everywhere. Like, you have That's true. Pick your spots where you're going to be able to, like, be at a deficiency. Like, you have to pick your spot. Okay, like, we understand that the NFL, like every team in the NFL, they put a whole lot of value in their second corner. Maybe we, as a zone team, and because we believe so much in pressure in our front four, we can get away with below average play at corner number two, and that's where we can save a little bit of money. Because you can't be good everywhere. You got to pick and choose. And by picking and choosing the two guys they did, Okuda and Henderson, it's like, okay, you're taking some project guys. It doesn't seem like you – and look, they could change this whole narrative with, in the draft, but it seems like right now maybe their priority for that second corner isn't as high as most people's priority at second corner.
I mean, you look at it and say, well, the three deficiencies that are possibilities would be the second corner, the D tackle, the safety, right? Because you're relying on Jimmy Ward to be healthy. And
they probably have a bigger Jimmy Ward bias than we do, though. Like, I'm sure D'Amico, because he's been around him with forever, like, he probably holds him in higher regard than we do, because we don't have that relationship with him for multiple years.
Yeah, I can understand that. But, like, what we saw of Jimmy Ward is the lasting memory that we're going to have. As a Texan, he couldn't stay healthy, and when he was on the field, he was okay, to where you would hope that there's a plan in place for an upgrade. But I think if those are the three choices, I'll live and die with Jimmy Ward and Petrie and try and upgrade D-tackle and second corner.
Yeah, but if you look at, like, the urgency they had to spend money on guys that can get to the quarterback versus guys who can play good coverage, what did they tell you? They told you we're willing to spend money on guys who can get to the quarterback, where they kind of bargain bin shop the corners.
And the extension of that might be, we think that if you give the quarterback less time in the pocket because you've got guys pressuring him from both sides, then maybe your corner play at that second corner doesn't have to be as great as it was.
I think especially in a zone.
Yeah.
Like, especially in a zone versus a man. Like, a basketball, like, cross-sport reference isn't apples to apples here, because man versus 2-3 zone, drastically different than, like, cover two and man-to-man defense guarding some of these best receivers in the NFL. I don't think it's a great comparison. The second theory that I have is, I'm not sure the Texans prioritize, like, this fantastic name as their one tech. Because there's a lot of guys who play, you know, 4-3 defense or even 3-4s where they want a guy in the middle who just takes up space and eats blocks. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, it doesn't need to be a guy who's going to rack up a bunch of tackles.
It's not a glamorous position.
It's not a guy that has to get to the quarterback. It's a guy that eats space, takes up attention, takes on blocks, and allows the rest of the team, in this case the front seven, to either get to the quarterback or to stop the ball carrier. So that's another theory that I'm kind of seeing how the rest of the offseason goes.
Yeah, I could see that. I could see them thinking, look, I just need a big body that's athletic enough to do the things that you outlined and then let our guys go eat. And if they can find that guy, maybe they feel like they already have that guy or one of those guys. We'll see. But I think of those three positions that look like they could be the less than, I'll take doing whatever they're thinking at D tackle and then figure, and to take their best judgment on how they want to handle safety in the second corner.
Yeah, so those are the two theories I'm thinking about right now. And look, they could change this for before the week one of the NFL season. But those are two things that are on my mind when I look at this Houston Texans defense. But I do think that they've upped their ability to pressure the quarterback. I wouldn't say stop good quarterbacks because you're never going to stop them, but at least give yourself a fighting chance. I like where this defense is at, quite frankly. I think they have a chance to be pretty good. I think they have a chance to generate all sorts of pressure. I love the Danielle Hunter signing. I think the Azeez Al-Shaair signing is going to be one that goes under the radar, too, because I think Al-Shaair and Christian Harris, if you're like playing a lot of nickel, which I expect them to, because right now your third best linebacker is Henry To'oTo'o, which is like, I like him as a backup, don't like him as a starter. You're probably playing a lot of nickel, and I think Al-Shaair and Harris cover a lot of ground.
No, I agree with you. I feel very strongly that this defense has upgraded. This defense is going to wreak a lot more havoc. They're going to be a lot more dominant, and I'm excited to see what else they are still going to do between now and camp to try and make it even better. But I think no matter what, you actually, when you hear different people across the league too, the first thing that they're notating is, wow, Texans went and really kind of went for it on defense, and that looks like a defense that could be dominant.
Yeah, 713-780-ESPN. This guy. Okay, I'm not responding to that. 713-780-3776. What are you nominating for the car wreck of the day? 713-780-3776. What is your car wreck of the day? That's next. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
You all right?
My leg is broken. The bone's coming through.
You prick! Where's my money?
This is the car wreck of the day.
He's blank on Branham. What are you nominating for the car wreck of the day? 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. Blankers, what are you nominating?
I'll finish where I started. I'll start with the one that I had a little bit of my ire to start the day, and that is, if you throw a no-hitter, it should be on the front page of ESPN. And the fact that it wasn't and it was third on the baseball page is weak sauce, and I didn't like it.
Okay, that's fair enough. I know that you feel a way about
certain
that.
Way,
which
yeah.
I think some people do. I think the majority do. I think over half Astro fans do. I'm going to nominate the rage of one Adolis Garcia. I'm not going to say what causes this rage. Mm-hmm. I know sluggers in the past that have been accused of certain things have threatened lawsuits against those that have slandered their name. So I'm not going to say at all, what causes the rage of one Adolis Garcia. But Adolis Garcia's rage is on a very high alert. So I'm going to nominate the rage of Adolis Garcia for the car wreck of the day. There are some people who think that roids lead to rage. Not saying that's the case here.
Oh,
I'm
some
just
people
saying
on
some
X
people
were
think that.
Adamant about
some
it.
People think that.
Yeah.
Some people do think that, you know, roid rage is a thing. That is something that is talked about. That people that are on the use of PEDs and steroids, that sometimes their rage increases. I'm not saying that's what leads to Adolis Garcia's rage or his humongous trapezoids. But, yeah, we're going to go with that. Yeah. Total Arlington tells me to tread lightly. I am treading lightly. Uncle Barney said he wants to nominate the guy who paid his cable bill with your credit card, Blankers.
Yep. Dumbass.
Yep. That's a pretty good one. You have any others?
Yeah. Pat McAfee show today. The car wreck was the fact that they get away with unbelievable amount of language and stories and things. Dan Orlovsky was on the show today doing them a solid for the second time this week. And McAfee swore that he farted on the air and embarrassed the hell out of him. And then Orlovsky went from total denial to blaming the windshield wipers to just completely getting upset. It's worth a watch, but man, what a car wreck that was as a complete segment. And they kept going back to it. I think at a certain point they enhanced it, but it was a car wreck for television, but it was entertaining.
Did you catch it while I was on the show?
I didn't think that he did anything, and that's why when they replayed it, I thought he might be getting set up and they are like doing, they're adding some sound effects. But the more he's tried to talk his way out of it, and maybe it was just that he's just not that guy, and then he started thinking about how everyone's gonna watch it and come at him on social media about it, it was like, oh man, that's a car wreck and a half for him.
So you heard it live and you didn't think it actually happened?
I was in the office working on the show and stuff too, and I looked up and I was like, wait a minute, what'd he say? And then when he really called him out and like in graphic detail what he did, and then they ran it again, I was like, maybe he did.
Yeah, I saw the tweet, but I haven't actually watched the video. Like, I tend to usually side on the side that it wasn't that.
Right.
Like, and if you do that, like, you just own it.
You own it, right? It makes it worse. Austin, did you listen to it?
Yeah, I think he did.
You think he did it? Okay.
Well, the car wreck should be Orlovsky then for not so much that he did it. It should be that he didn't own up to it.
Yeah.
Like, just own it, man. Everybody does it.
Right. It's a natural bodily function.
Yeah. Sometimes you can't control it. Like, hey, things happen, man.
It was
like,
rather humorous.
If he was like, yeah, my bad, no one would even bat an eye. The fact that he's trying to, like, cover up the story is what really is leading to it more than anything else.
Yeah.
Yeah, he shouldn't cover up the story if he actually did it. That's no good. I'm going to nominate the women's basketball LSU women's basketball defense, allowing Caitlin Clark to score 41. Look, I'm not Kim Mollett Robinson. I think she dropped the Robinson. I read that Washington Post nothing burger. She's no longer with her former husband where she added the name Washington.
Oh, so she's, I didn't know that she ever did that.
She's just back to being Kim Mulkey now, or Kim Mullet, I mean. She's a Hall of Fame coach. I get it. How do you not have a better game plan for Caitlin Clark? She scored 41 points.
According to her, they did everything they could possibly do, and she just was that good.
Bodies at her. I'm forcing the ball out of her hand.
I think that's the biggest thing that I said. You know what? Whether you want to put one solo defender on her and just say, box and one, but don't leave her sight and then get help in the middle, or like you said, just the minute the ball crosses half court, you put two on her and say, anybody else on this squad is beating me. But 41 in a game like that, that means you didn't do very well.
Why don't you just pick her up full court?
You can start with a box and one and have someone just shadow her from the backcourt. And when the ball crosses half court, put a second defender in the area to make sure she doesn't touch it.
They got UConn in the semis?
I
think they play UConn in the semis.
Is that right? South Carolina's got NC State?
I believe so. Okay. Yeah, I think I'm pretty sure that UConn plays Iowa in the semifinal. I bet you Geno doesn't let Caitlin Clark score 41.
NC State plays South Carolina. You're right. Yeah, UConn plays Iowa. You're probably right. And UConn has a girl that is like their designated defender that they put on Juju last night that they'll probably do exactly what we said. She will be on Caitlin no matter where she goes and then help as necessary.
Yeah, she's not scoring 41 on UConn. How bad did UConn win that game?
They won by about 9, I think.
Okay.
Let me see. I got the scores right here.
Yeah, it's not that big a deal. 9-ish is good enough for me. Yeah. 523 says nominate Lubies. Come on.
Why?
Lubies ain't bad. Lubies okay.
Why are we nominating Lubies?
Because it came up earlier in the show.
I know.
4958.
A lot of people like Lubies.
Yeah. It's fine. It's not bad. I want to nominate 25% of people that think that could beat Sean Salisbury. That's a good call. That's too high.
I want to nominate Paul for thinking he can't beat Larry and Stafford in a fight.
Yeah, but he didn't have any confidence now.
That's what I'm saying, but why not? I mean, what happened to Mr. Self-Confidence completely petering out and saying, yeah, I don't know if I could do that, but I sure do appreciate you guys cheering for me. What?
Well, now that I know that's his attitude, I think he might be right.
Well, yeah.
Like, you have to have
changes my opinion, too.
Yeah, you have to have a little bit. You have to have a little bit of moxie. You got to have a little bit of moxie, a little bit of desire, spirit, and he's not showing that. So I'm questioning my takes on Paul's toughness in winning a fight.
Yeah, I was very disappointed for him to drop that on me in passing. I was like, wait a minute, what?
Yeah,
We're betting on you, and you're not even betting on yourself?
It's no good. It's no good. I want to nominate Andy Enfield for leaving USC for SMU.
Why?
Because he's... I don't know. You tell me. I would imagine because he felt like he was getting on the hot seat at USC, and this can kind of reset his clock a bit. I'm sure SMU can give you some money now. SMU is going to the ACC for free. Like they're willing to throw around some money with the donors that they have, pony excess.
He recruited pretty well at SC too.
Yeah, he did. He just couldn't get it going there. But I can't believe someone left USC for SMU.
I can't either. You got LeBron's kid there. You got a McDonald's All-American. You've been recruiting well. You're in Los Angeles. Yeah, that's a little surprising, but maybe he got an offer he couldn't refuse financially.
I think it's more about the job security. Because I feel like he felt he was a year or two away from, like, getting fired. And now he's probably getting a five-year deal.
Hey, Lanier wasn't bad. I meant to ask you that anyway.
No, he wasn't.
He wasn't bad, and now he's going to Rice?
I thought he got a raw deal, actually. I thought that was a bad fire.
Didn't he win 20 games?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, over 20 wins in his second year. I thought that was a bad fire. I think he's going to – well, I hope he does well at Rice. I thought that was a good get for Rice.
I think it was a good get for Rice, for sure. Yep.
That was a really good get for Rice. All right, what's winning?
Man, I don't know. You guys call it.
Keith from L.A. says he wants to go with the ESPN headline, not mentioning the Astros. So let's go with that.
And a Dodger fan saying that, I'll take it.
Yeah, if a Dodger fan saying that, I think that it cements it as our car wreck of the day.
There we go.
The car wreck of the day, ESPN for not using the no-hitter on their ESPN front page at all. And it was the third story on their MLB page. All right, does it for us. Thanks so much for Austin Rodriguez doing the hard work. Good job. I think you're in the mix for the full-time gig. He's Blank. I'm Branham. We'll talk to you tomorrow, Houston. Coming up next, ESPN National Hall of Fame at 7 tonight with Booker T, Brad Gilmore. Catch the Space Cowboys right now on 92.5. Goodbye, Houston.